All right, at this time, we'll let the musicians go down while you're turning in your Bibles to Genesis 29. All right, out of respect for the Word of God, let's stand together as I began reading with verse 28. And Jacob did so and fulfilled her week, and he gave him Rachel, his daughter, to wife also. And Laban gave to Rachel, his daughter, Bilhah, his handmaid, to be her maid. And he went in also unto Rachel, and he loved also Rachel more than Leah, and served with him yet 7 other years. And when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. And Leah conceived and bare a son, and she called his name Reuben, for she said, "Surely the Lord hath looked upon my affliction. Now therefore my husband will love me."
At this, in this portion of Genesis, we are again in the soap opera of the Bible, the life of Jacob. And in last week's message, we followed Jacob into Haran, about 500 miles from home, where he met the love of his life, Rachel. Now whether God intended for Jacob to marry Rachel or Leah is up for debate. But in Jacob's mind, there was only one woman for him, and that was the beautiful Rachel. Jacob was also quickly enrolled in Laban's school of hard knocks by agreeing to work for 7 years for the right to marry Rachel. And we're not going to go over that again, but Jacob is not winning any points as a negotiator at this point in his life. He certainly is not showing much wisdom in dealing with the real world. He ended up paying, in today's terms, about $275,000 for the right to marry Rachel. Still, he thought it was a good bargain, and the 7 years flew by, so great was his love and his desire to have her as his wife. But Rachel had an older sister, and Leah was tender-eyed, which may mean that she had weak eyesight, or it may mean that she had a very tender expression and had pretty eyes, but certainly she was not the beauty queen that her sister was. I'm reminded, I knew a pair of sisters in Bible college, and one of them was very beautiful and the other seemed very plain. And it was they weren't even very similar in appearance. And that kind of reminds me of Rachel and Leah. She was the total package when it came to physical looks. And then Leah, all that you could really say about Leah was that she had tender eyes. Now, by the way, I want to say this also. Most of us don't have movie star looks and we get along just fine. Okay? And I, especially when our young folks and our girls especially, understand, there's no one that has perfect looks. And you can't spend your life consumed with the little flaws in your appearance and wishing you had this or looked like that and had this style and that. Instead of watching so much television, folks, if you could see those women when they're not all made up and digitally altered on television, it would change your opinion on how they looked. And some of our girls today, they should spend less time watching TV and spend more time walking around Walmart. It'll change their lives. Their self-esteem will go way up when they see what normal people are like. Most of us are just average-looking people. We're more like Leah than like Rachel. And yet, even guys like me find girls that will marry them and love them. I mean, if Shelby can find someone, anyone can find something. Brother Dart can find someone. There's hope for anybody. Amen. Even Stephen, I mean, it's just all around the room. And so don't worry if you don't have the movie star looks. You can have a wonderful life. Most of us get along just fine without it. Now, on Jacob's wedding night, Laban pulled the ultimate switcheroo. The bride apparently was heavily veiled, and the lights were down way low. Because he didn't even realize that it was late. By the way, when we do weddings today, what's one of the first, before they walk off the platform, what does the groom do? He lifts the veil. That may go back to this story. I'm going to make sure, yep, that's you. So anyhow... ultimate switcheroo. Jacob didn't realize until the morning light that he'd actually married Leah and not Rachel, and a lot of men realize too late that they've married the wrong woman. Now, it doesn't, and I kind of mentioned this last week, I've done some more study, it doesn't seem to me that Jacob had any recourse in this situation once the marriage had been consummated. I have tried to find the earliest records of divorce, and I can't find anything going back this far in history. I don't even know if it had been invented yet. Probably be good if it had never been invented. But it seems to me that as far as we can tell, that back then, if you married a woman and that marriage was consummated, you were married for life, and it was till death did you part, and there was nothing that could be done. It certainly seems that Jacob was determined that even though he had been tricked, he was going to honor this marriage. And he did. They stayed married all the way until Leah died, and he buried her in Machpelah, where Abraham and Sarah were buried. So Jacob was her husband. She was his wife. Now the question is, should he have married Rachel? I think that he should not have. God never gave him permission to become a bigamist. But whether he should or shouldn't have, this is the soap opera of the Bible, and he did. We're going to see what happens. He's beginning to learn the law of the harvest, that God is not mocked. Whatsoever man soweth, that shall he also reap. Jacob deceived his father. Now he's been deceived by his father-in-law. He pretended to be the elder. Now Leah has pretended to be the younger. He entered his mother's deception while Leah entered her father's deception. You know, it'd be good for us as we go through the situations we deal with in life to sometimes look at that situation and see if any of it looks familiar. Does this plant look something like something I've planted? Or when a rock bounces off your head, someone throws a rock and it bounces off your head and it lands on the ground, you look down and you think, that looks like a rock I threw at somebody else last week. Now it's coming back to me. To remember that we do reap what we sow. Now, Jacob then foolishly agreed to work another 7 years for Rachel. Well, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. He should have stood his ground. He could have said, hey, listen, I worked for 7 years for Rachel. It's not my fault that you pulled this deception. I'm taking Rachel, I'm taking Leah, and I'm heading home. He could have stood his ground. Instead, he was cowed by Laban, and he was quite a pushover. He seems like a pushover in a lot of situations in his life. And it's not good for a man to be a pushover. Sometimes a man has to stand up. So he agrees to work another 7 years. That's double purchase now on Rachel. We're now up to about $550,000 for Rachel, 14 years of his life. Now, the rest of chapter 29 and the first 24 verses of chapter 30 cover the 7 years of Jacob's second contract with Laban. After that, he started to return to Canaan, and then he signed a third contract, and he stayed to work for Rachel. We'll get to that later. But it's important to realize that what we're going to discuss tonight all takes place within 7 years. Within 7 years, he's going to have 12 kids, two wives and two concubines. And none of that was his intention when he first started out. You'll forgive me if I laugh sometimes during this series, but I do find it ironically fun just to watch this man stumble and to see the decisions that he makes and to realize that these same mistakes are still being made every day of the year on this earth as people are still following in this way of life, a godless way of life. Now, in those 7 or 8 years, Jacob's family grows to 11 sons and one daughter. Only one son was born in Canaan. Who was that? Benjamin, the youngest. All the rest born outside of Canaan. He is going to have 11 sons, one daughter. That was Dinah. And that's very possible in 7 or 8 years when you have four wives. By the way, that's one reason, and Brother Smith mentioned this the other day, that's one reason why the mother is growing. It's not that they're converting a bunch of people to Islam. It's that they have four wives apiece, bunch of kids, while Westerners, we don't want kids, or we have fur babies instead of having children. So the Muslim world is growing, Western world is in decline, but Jacob, he's got these four women, and within 8 years, he's got 12 children. And Benjamin will come a little while after. Now, this means that all of those kids are very close in age. The difference between Reuben the firstborn and Joseph is only 7 years. That's a pretty tightly packed family. And I think it'll help you to understand these stories as we read them, to kind of keep that in mind of how close in age his family is. Now tonight I want you to consider some lessons from Jacob's new and growing family. Notice first that dishonesty is a terrible family value. Dishonesty is a terrible family value. One thing we have to learn from Laban's household is that dishonesty, deception, and deceit are terrible family qualities. You know, it's interesting how many family TV shows are based on dishonesty. Go with me? We watch, our kids watch Andy Griffith, right? Which is only good when Barney's in it. Be honest. And I Love Lucy. You know, these old TV shows. I have a hard time. You know, there's two kinds of people that watch a show. There's some who can just sit and watch it and just enjoy it. And then there's some like me who have to sit there and really think about what's happening. And I end up preaching at the TV. And no one wants to be around me. Because I'm saying that's a lie. But here's how these TV shows work. The whole basis of it is Lucy's lying to Ricky because she doesn't want Ricky to find out what she bought. Or Lucy and Ethel are lying to Fred and Ricky. Or Andy is lying to Opie. Or Opie's lying to Andy. Even Aunt B is lying sometimes. Now, in TV, it's funny because you see this, what starts out as small and it builds, and that's where all the comedic effect is of all this stuff and them trying to work around their initial lies. And it's funny on television, but it's not funny in real life. We can't be lying to each other, lying to our children, lying to our parents, lying to our spouses, lying to our siblings, lying to our grandparents, and expect to have happy, healthy families and homes. Dishonesty is a terrible family value. What do we see in the family of Laban? Rebekah came from his family. She's a deceiver. Jacob's a deceiver. Laban is a deceiver. Leah is deceitful. Rachel is found, she later lied right in her father's face. Later we find that deceit and dishonesty are among Jacob's children. Remember when that situation with Dinah, we haven't gotten that far yet, obviously, but the Shechem took Dinah, wanted to marry her, and Jacob's son said, well, we can't marry among you until you have this surgery and become like us, then we'll intermarry and we'll become one people. And so all the men of Shechem had that surgery, and while they were recovering, the sons of Jacob went and murdered them en masse, slaughtered them. Why? It was a deception, it was a lie, it was a trick. Where'd they learn that? And then later on after that, they sold Joseph off into slavery, took his coat of many colors, dipped it in goat blood, brought it back to their father, and lied right in his face. We found this, I guess an animal ate your son. And they lived that lie for years. Folks, deception and dishonesty are terrible family values. Dishonesty is natural. We're born liars. Honesty has to be taught, and honesty is not hereditary. Honesty is a learned behavior, and it has to become a learned value. We must be honest in our homes. One of the most important lessons I ever was taught as a young parent is this, that we teach a little by what we say, we teach more by what we do, we teach most by what we are. Here's what parents do. They say all the right things. Haven't I told you this? Don't you listen to what I say? And their kids are like, I can't hear what you're saying over the loud example that you're setting. Amen. Parents lying to their kids, deceiving their kids, being dishonest with their kids, that teaches a bad value system. It teaches us to be dishonest. We have to love honesty and hate dishonesty. I hate lying. When someone lies to me, it takes a long time for me to get over it. I had never let our kids lie to us. Lying was a big sin in our family. If you did something wrong and you own up to it, that's very easy to fix. But when you start lying, it just compounds the problem. This is not the Andy Griffith Show. This is real life. You have started lying. You are in more trouble for the lie than what got you in trouble in the first place. Hate lying. Hate dishonesty. I don't tolerate it, and I don't lie to my kids. I don't deceive them. I don't mislead them. I don't lie to them. And by the way, I don't even make promises to them. I doubt that my kids can think of one time when I have said I promise anything. Because Jesus taught us to say, let our yea be yea and our nay be nay. Anything else comes of evil. We start making promises because we want the kid to get off our back about it. Well, the kid doesn't forget that you promised. And when you don't fulfill your promise, now they have lost respect for you and lost some trust. I remember times when I was a kid and people promised me things they didn't even try to come through on. They just said it at the time with good intentions, with no real intention to ever bring it to pass. My kids ask you something. If it's a yes, it's a yes. If it's a no, it's a no. If it's a maybe, it's a maybe. If I'm going to try, I'll say, I'll try, and I'll try to do it. But if it's not definite possible, then it may not work out. Not Superman. We have to be intentionally honest with our children and teach them to deal with each other and to deal with us in honest terms. Never lied to my kids about holidays. If my kids wanted to know something that was an adult type question, then I just would say, that's none of your business, or that's, you're too young for that. Don't make stuff up. We have a nation full of lying, swimming in lies, because we don't want to just be honest and deal honestly with each other. Well-intentioned lies are still lies. Far better to be honest than to give someone a sugar-coated lie that's going to turn their belly sour later. Remember, we teach a little by what we say, we teach more by what we do, we teach most by what we are. If we don't value honesty, we will not have the family value of honesty. We have to value it personally, practice it, we have to pass it on, not just by what we say, but by what we do. Laban, he passed on certainly a heritage of lying, dishonesty. They're all lying. Everybody's lying about everything. And it's not going to produce a healthy home. Number two, Leah is an example of the kind of woman to beware of. I know this is not, you know, so many of these messages on Wednesday night, they would not give me an A+ in homiletics. But we're discussing real life also, and the Bible deals with real life. When I see Leah in this passage, she is an example of the kind of woman that our boys and our men need to be aware of. How did she get her husband? She deceived a man into marrying her. She stole another woman's husband. Isn't that the line? How'd she get a husband? She deceived him. Pretended to be somebody else. She stole the man that her sister was married. That's stealing somebody else's husband. Are we going to praise her for this? No, I praise her not. I'm not going to paint Leah in any rosy color. She wanted a husband. She didn't care how she got her or from who or whom she got him from. That's a dangerous type of woman. This is the kind of woman, guys, listen. This is the kind of woman who will try to get pregnant so she can marrying her. She'll force a shotgun wedding. She is the kind of woman who does not care if that guy's already married or engaged. She wants him. You don't deserve him. I deserve him. And she'll try to take him. Doesn't matter if he's married, engaged, be married. She doesn't care. She wants him for herself, and he can learn to love her after. That's her attitude. This kind of woman is out there, and men ought to beware. Single and married need to beware of the kind of women who seek out marriage by these kinds of means. We hear a lot about masculinity. Well, there is a version of masculinity that's toxic. Masculinity by itself is not toxic. What about toxic females? You know, if you do a study of the Bible, you'll find the following women mentioned throughout the Bible. The foolish woman. The silly woman laden with sin. The strange woman. The drunken woman. The perverse woman. The wicked woman. The evil woman. The brawling woman. The indiscreet woman. The deceived woman. So that is also out there. And the fastest way for a young man to mess up his life is to get tangled up with someone like this. I would not want my son getting tangled up with someone like Leah. And as a married man, I don't want someone like her coming around trying to steal me away from her. A woman that will plot to force a marriage or deceive a man into marrying her or entrap a man or take another woman's husband is not the kind of woman that I would want to end up with. Now, thank God people can get born again. They can change their ways. But at this point, I'm not going to give Leah any praise for her part in this deception and entering into this marriage under these deceitful means. It's not. And I want to warn our boys, and parents ought to warn their boys. Sometimes we warn our girls about the men. One of the worst things that can happen to one of our girls is to end up with some guy that gets her pregnant out of wedlock and then splits. Well, are there no females for our boys to worry about? They couldn't mess their lives up at an early age too. So we got to be wise about this and understand that these people in the Bible are given for our admonition and for our learning. Now, notice that Leah spends the rest of her life trying to win the love and affection of a man that she's stolen. I think verse 32 is very sad. It says, Leah conceived and bare a son, and she called his name Reuben, for she said, surely the Lord hath looked upon my affliction. Now, therefore, my husband will love me. That's sad. Now, therefore, my husband will love me. And she says that several times when a son is born. Now my husband will be joined to me. Now my husband will love me. Now my husband will be with me. You know the best thing for our girls? Hey, marry someone who already loves you. Don't get married and then try and hope, I hope one day he loves me. You marry someone that you're already sure loves you. She spends her life playing catch up because she knows he loves Rachel. Well, sister, you knew that back before you snuck into his bedroom and pretended to be his bride. Far better to marry someone who already loves you instead of chasing after and trying to win something that Jacob never promised her. Number three. And that is another lesson. This is not very positive, I understand. But thirdly, sin complicates the family. I mentioned this many times throughout this study of Genesis, that sin complicates what ought to be simple. The home as God designed it is perfect. Now, we're not perfect, but the design is perfect. One man, one woman, husband and wife, then father and mother. It's a beautiful thing, but it's not simplistic. Having a good marriage is hard work. Rearing kids is hard work. Under the very best of circumstances, the family is a complicated institution. And anything can go wrong. Kids can go haywire. Spouses can go haywire. There's no telling the kinds of things that can go wrong. We can have our idealistic expectations of family, but there ain't no telling what's down the road. I mean, things can go all kinds of ways. But I will say this, sin will always complicate the home. The heartaches of ignoring God's plan for the family are many. Adding sin to the family does not help. Perverting God's design does not make the home improved in any way. Through dishonesty and a conspiracy to trick Jacob, things got complicated and then they got worse. Jacob is married to Leah, but he still wants Rachel. By the way, there could be another little sub-thought there, because a lot of men, they're married to Leah, but they have in their mind this perfect ideal Rachel. And so they're never happy with the woman they're married to, because they're always thinking about this Rachel that they can't have. That's a sub-sermon. Stick that aside and think about it later. Amen. A lot of men need to make peace with the fact that they're married to Leah, not some perfect model from a magazine. Yeah. Anyway, there's a lot of sub-thoughts I have this, and I'm trying to hit to the main points only. Jacob is married to Leah, but he still wants Rachel. So he married Rachel right away. Now he's got two wives. Leviticus 18:18, it says, "Neither shalt thou take a wife to her sister to vex her, to uncover her nakedness beside the other in her lifetime." No, don't marry sisters, unless one has passed away. But what we see in Jacob's home, in verse 30, he loved Rachel more than Leah. In verse 31, Leah was hated. God saw that Leah was hated. In chapter 30, in verse 1, it says, "When Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister." Now the tables have turned. See, Leah has always envied Rachel because of her looks, but now Rachel is envying her sister because she has children. So the tables are turned now. Verse 2, "And Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel. And he said, Am I in God's stead who hath withheld from thee the fruit of the womb?" Isn't that nice? Isn't that a nice, thoughtful thing to say to his wife who's all grieving and because she can't have any children? You see, what has happened now is discord, anger, hatred, envy, jealousy. These have come into the home. Now, the Bible does not encourage multiple wives, but it does record in the narrative when it takes place. And every time it's recorded in the Scriptures, it has negativity attached all over it. Nothing good has come of it. Now, look at chapter 30, verse 3. This led to other bad decisions. She said, "Behold, my maid Bilhah, going unto her, and she shall bear upon my knees, that I may also have children by her." Does that sound familiar? Can anyone say Ishmael? "And she gave him Bilhah, her handmaid, to wife, and Jacob went in unto her, and Bilhah conceived, and bare Jacob a son. And Rachel said, God hath judged me, and hath also heard my voice, and hath given me a son. Therefore called she his name Dan. And Bilhah, Rachel's maid, conceived again, and bare Jacob a second son. And Rachel said, With great wrestlings have I wrestled with my sister." So if anyone ever asks you, is women's wrestling in the Bible? There it is. "Great wrestlings have I wrestled with my sister, and I have prevailed." Which I think is funny, because at this point, Leah has four, and Rachel has two by another woman. And yet she says, I'm on top. 4-2. Verse 9. "When Leah saw that she had left bearing, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her Jacob to wife. And Zilpah, Leah's maid, bare Jacob a son. And Leah said, A troop cometh. She called his name Gad. And Zilpah, Leah's maid, bare Jacob a second son. And Leah said, Happy am I, for the daughters will call me blessed. And she called his name Asher." Now again, taking these concubines was a heathen practice. And now he's got essentially four wives. I was thinking if he was alive today and he had probably a big Suburban, you know, or a converted church van, carry this big family. And on the back, he went to Sticky Darts Design. Brother Dart made him a nice stick figure family, you know. And so his stick figure family's got Jacob. And then he's got four stick figures wearing skirts. And then he's got 11 stick figures wearing pants. And one little stick figure wearing a skirt. What a mess. And then there's a T-Rex eating his stick family. Now, Bilhah was an especially bad addition to the family because, about 20 years later, she carries on. She commits adultery with Reuben, her own stepson. There's nothing very pretty in all this, is there? That cost Reuben the birthright. So, now look at verse 14. Now, we don't have very many incidents other than conceptions and births in this passage. There's one passage that's interesting, verses 14 through 16, during this time frame. Reuben here is about 6 years old, 6-7 years old, went in the days of the wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field and brought them unto his mother Leah. Now, mandrakes are Mediterranean plants. They're very rare to that area, but they can sometimes be found. And so it was a rare find, and they were considered to have magical properties, and especially regarding fertility. Okay, so he's found some mandrakes, these unusual plants. They say that when you pull them out of the ground, they pull them out like carrots, but the tuber or whatever is under there looks like a man. He's got two arms coming out and two legs, and that's why they call them mandrakes. And they say when you pull them out, they kind of scream. Having never actually pulled mandrakes, I'm just telling you what the internet says. What's on the internet, it must be true. But they were considered to be aphrodisiacs. And when your kids ask you what that means later, just say, you're too young to know. Be honest with them. Or to help fertility, help women have conceived children. And so he brought them back to Leah, like she needs any help. And notice in verse number... still in verse 16. Then Rachel said to Leah, give me, I pray thee, of thy son's mandrakes. And she said unto her, is it a small matter that thou hast taken my husband? All right, now, does this scene sound familiar? Remember when one brother comes in out of the field, another brother's cooking some soup, and then one brother says, well, I'm so hungry. Give me a bowl of soup for your hungry brother. And Jacob says, I'll sell it to you. What do you want? I'm about to die. I want the birthright. Well, good is that going to be to me when I'm dead? So he sells them the birthright. Not very much brotherly love there. And here we have sisterly love. You would think that if you have two sisters, one has now four children, and the other has not been able to naturally bear any, and you have these magical mandrakes, and the sister wants them, you think that one says, yeah, go ahead and try them. No. Not when they're now rivals in the same household. So now she's going to sell the mandrakes, just like Jacob sold the pot of soup. By the way, isn't that kind of funny how Leah sees things? Small matter that thou hast taken my husband. Is that how it worked out? Isn't it amazing how we can rewrite our own history sometimes? That's not how I remember it, Leah. Seems to me like he was engaged to Rachel, worked 7 years for her, and you're the one that stole him from her, and now you're mad at her, because he loves her more. Rachel said, therefore he shall lie with thee tonight for thy son's mandrakes. And Jacob came out of the field in the evening, and Leah went out to meet him and said, thou must come unto me, for surely I have hired thee with my son's mandrakes. Isn't that sad when you got to hire your own husband? And so he said, preacher, that's in the Bible? Yeah, we just read it. Is God approving of all this? God's watching it. And so you have rivals instead of sisters, and you have this polygamous mess, and you got he's usually with Rachel, but everyone's like over with Leah, and Leah wants him, and it's just a mess, just a mess. You see, the main point is that sin complicates what ought to be simple. And I know I'm not trying to rub salt in old wounds for folks, but I am trying to point out that, you know, especially for our young folks, we're never going to be the ideal, but we should shoot for the ideal, you know. It's a wonderful thing when family, you have the nuclear family still intact, and it's not all spread out all over the place with six sets of grandparents and three sets of step in this and in that, and just that, what a mess the family has become. But oh, God has something better for us. But sin is what wrecks what God designed. Now, notice the birth of Joseph in verse 22. And God remembered Rachel, and God hearkened to her and opened her womb. And she conceived and bare a son and said, God hath taken away my reproach. And she called his name Joseph and said, the Lord shall add to me another son. So this is the first natural son by the beloved wife of Jacob and named Joseph. And it almost became a turning point in Jacob's life because at that point he was at the end of that second 7-year contract. And he determined, I'm going to head back to Canaan and went and talked to Laban about it. We'll see that in a moment. But there's someone in this passage we've seen repeatedly and hardly commented on. But he was there. He promised to be there. He was involved behind the scenes. And who is that? It's God. God's there. In fact, he was mentioned throughout chapter 29. He's mentioned throughout chapter 30. He had promised to be with Jacob, and he was with Jacob. He's the one giving the children. He's the one looking down and seeing that Leah's hated and Rachel's loved. And by the way, and I know this is complicated, but even though Leah got him through deceptive methods, he's her husband and he's got to love her. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. It's a husband's responsibility to love his wife. If he's going to keep her as a wife, he has to love her as a wife. God's watching. Saw she was hated, Rachel was loved. He starts giving her children. She doesn't have children. He's watching. By the way, it doesn't say that God was involved at all with the concubines. But it does mention specifically giving children to Leah and giving children to Rachel. I don't know if that means anything. I just want to point it out. Now, why was God involved at all in this mess? I'll give you two words. Grace, providence. God was gracious to Jacob, and God had a providential plan. Now, how God works in this world and how God works among His people and how God deals even in the lives of individual backslidden Christians is simply beyond my understanding. People are always trying to put God in a box and say God would do this and God wouldn't do that. And this is, and I just read the Bible and I see God doing things and I don't know. His ways are far above my ways and His thoughts are far above my thoughts. I'm just glad that God is gracious and I'm glad God has a providential plan. And I don't know how God takes the messes that people make like Jacob and somehow brings Joseph out of it to save the whole world. And Joseph did save his world. And ultimately, through that family, came Christ, who's to be the Savior of the whole world. How does God do that? The fact is, if God didn't work with sinners, He wouldn't work with anybody. Right? I just rejoice that I see that God is still involved. God is still there. Now, we see in verse 25, where we conclude here, chapter 30, verse 25, it came to pass, when Rachel had borne Joseph, that Jacob said unto Laban, send me away that I may go into mine own place in my own country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served thee, and let me go, for thou knowest my service which I have done thee. So he said, my contract's up. I'm a free agent. I'm heading home. I haven't seen mom and dad in a long time. Surely Esau's calmed down. Mom wants to see the grandkids. And I'm ready to head home. But Laban wasn't quite done with Joseph. And Jacob, turns out, wasn't quite done with Laban. And so we're going to come back next week and we'll pick up again and see what was yet in store. There's another 6 or 7 years left in Haran before Jacob finally heads home towards Bethel. Not yet to Bethel, but towards Bethel.